Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, good morning. It's Sunday, April 27th, 2008, and this is Solder Smoke 82. You might hear it in the background. Hold on. That, my friends, is 80-meter early morning CW in Europe. I don't know, it might be AA1 TJ's beacon. More on that in a minute. But I got the HW8 fired up this morning. All kinds of solder have been melted here. Antennas have been built. DX has been worked. Life is good in Rome. Let's see. The first thing I wanted to do this morning, did I say this is Solder Smoke 82? Issue 82, for those of you who are keeping count. I just wanted to mention that regarding that, that rather delicate matter of the reception reports from Mike, AA1TJ's beacon, that, was alleged to have been received here in Rome. Well, it was received here in Rome, except it wasn't via the normal ionospheric path. It was it did bounce its way across the Atlantic, but it did so in digitized packets off the walls of fiber optic cables at the bottom of the sea. But I wanted to share with you guys, and I'm not meaning to gloat on this thing, I thought I should share with you some of the technical details of the operation that Michael participated in. And he sent me a note here I started the whole thing. I am the guilty party. I am the intellectual author of this scam. I blame the American Radio Relay League, especially the staff of QST. They are the ones who have firmly entrenched the April 1st tradition in the ham radio culture. So I'm just going with the flow here, guys. But Michael sends me a note. He says, this is when we were in the midst of planning this thing in late March. Hi, Bill. I'm sending along four audio files. Please let me know if they are what you had in mind. They were indeed. He says, I made the recordings myself using a 1N524A Zener diode, a 33 kilo-ohm resistor, and a surplus color burst crystal as my transmitter. The signal was received 4 feet across the bench using a one transistor 80 meter direct conversion receiver. At 0.5 microwatts output power, that works out to 1500 miles per watt. Well, okay, so it was 1500, not 40 million. It was still pretty good. Michael goes on, I tried to mimic QSB by waving my hand around the receiver while touching the quartz crystal lead with the other hand, typical of the high-tech operations here at Alpha Alpha 1 Tango Juliet. Fine business, Michael, and thanks for that. I thought you guys would be interested. I took the files that Michael sent across and selected one of them, and, well, the rest is history. I came across something that, I've been kind of ribbing Michael here a little bit. But I came across something here that was kind of in keeping with that, the ribbing. It was a quote by actually a short book review in the Wall Street Journal Europe edition on it was a short review of Walden by Henry David Thoreau, 1854. And I thought this was very QRP-ish. It says here, American literature is filled with the troubled search for Eden. But the search for Eden that seems most central to America is that of Thoreau at Walden Pond. Now here's the ham radio bit. His account of living for 2 years in a shack of his own construction has lost none of its power. Here's another QRP bit. The appeal of his cry, simplify, 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 has only grown. There you go. All right. So Henry David Thoreau, definitely a QRP-er, definitely a home brewer. Fine business. Continue the tradition. I know what Michael is. Yeah, Thoreau would approve. Let's see. What else? I was going to add something on there. Well, we'll just... yes. Simplify, simplify, simplify. Guys, this is why I have, I'm proud to say, abandoned all efforts to fix my computer. You know, I find that there are certain activities, certain technical projects that if I work on them, at the end of the session, I feel better. I feel good. Working on my 20-meter double sideband transceiver, that's one of those activities. Then there are other technical activities that I find that no matter what I do, at the end of the session, I feel worse. And that usually includes anything to do with fixing, repairing, updating, modifying, maintaining, whatever, with the computers. I just, it's just not my thing. And I guess it should be. I mean, it's part of the, definitely part of our world here, but I guess it's just not my thing. So, one of the problems is I think that, it's kind of a clash of cultures. And also I think if you have the knack, it makes working on the computers actually more difficult. I'll explain why. The knack, it causes you to want to know why things broke and why things are not working. And it also makes you want to actually repair electronic devices that aren't working properly. If you have the knack and you have in your house, and especially in your ham shack, a piece of electronic equipment that's not working the way it's supposed to, you really want to fix it. All right? But I realize now, and this realization comes through conversations that I've had with a number of computer technicians, that basically that fixing it bit is considered very old-fashioned. The thing to do these days, it seems, is to treat the entire box as one component, you know, like a resistor. And if there's something goes wrong in there, well, you don't go in and fix the resistor, and you don't go in and fix the computer. The overwhelming response I get when I ask folks in this field, not on the list here, because not on the QRPL, not solder smoke listeners, because all solder smoke listeners and guys on QRPL have the knack. But when you ask people who don't really have the knack and who are in the computer field how to fix this problem, they give you scornful looks and say, take out your credit card and buy a new one, and then your problem will be solved. Of course, this is difficult to do if you have the knack. And I've had this this urge to fix it. And it's been a tale of woe, frustration. I want to troubleshoot it. I want to know what's wrong with the thing. But it's kind of hard to know what's wrong with the thing when in fact, I don't even really know how the thing works. So anyway, I put that whole project on the shelf, put it aside, and this has all left me firmly convinced that amidst all this talk of software-defined radios, SDR, well, just color me a troglodyte, and I've come to the conclusion that I'm more of a fan of what I guess we can call hardware-defined radios. Definitely, for me, it's hardware-defined radios. Speaking of hardware, I am a big fan of the QRPL mailing list. I'm also a subscriber to the EMRFD, the Experimental Methods in RF Design mailing list. And I also get the BitX20 mailing list. GQRP, of course, also. And I'm sure, like for many of you, this flow of email is sort of like the having a daily newspaper dedicated to homebrew and QRP. It's great. And, you know, there's certain stars in these groups that you really look forward to their messages. I also look forward to the messages from newcomers who are seeking assistance, and that's of course kind of an electronic extension of the really, I guess, the prime directive of amateur radio culture. to borrow a phrase from Star Trek, is the that you must help your fellow ham, and you must be especially helpful of newcomers who seek assistance. And the QRPL is a great place for that. Occasionally, there's some deviations where a newcomer will ask for help and get kind of a less than completely helpful response, but that's usually corrected pretty quickly by folks who are perhaps more cognizant of the prime directive. It's a great place, and I love reading those messages. And so one of the definite stars of this list, our friend Farhan, put out some really great messages about problems that were discovered in the design of the preselector on the BitX20. This kind of message, I mean, it wasn't so much the particular technical issue that caught my attention, but I was really, it was great to hear that even Farhan, as he put it, was scratching his head over this kind of technical problem. And I found it encouraging that even a guy at Farhan's level will find himself scratching his head because, guys, I do a lot of head scratching here in Rome. Did a lot in London too, it was just encouraging to see that Farhan is engaged sometimes in the same kind of puzzlement about what's wrong with a circuit. Also, that he finds and uses LT Spice. I've been making increasing use of that bit of software, and I think Farhan said that in dealing with this problem, he also made use of the almost all digital electronics filter simulator. I haven't tried that one. I should. But Farhan in his messages also said something that I found particularly, it resonated with me this week, and I'll explain why in a minute, but that in working on this problem, he decided to use a very large piece of PC board on which to build and test the circuits. This is a smart move. I think from now on, anytime I start a project, I'm gonna, and when I estimate what the final size of the box will be, I'm gonna go ahead and increase the size of that box by 25% or 50% just to give myself more room. Because usually what happens is the end of the process, when I'm now going back and trying to debug and troubleshoot and everything else, I find my big fat fingers working in tiny little boxes, and I think, oh, why didn't I just build this box bigger and make it easier? So, fine business, Farhan, and thanks for sharing with us your struggles, your recent struggles with the BitX20. Another thing that kind of didn't, this one didn't come to me via the QRPL, the mailing list. So this came as a result of a web search, but this fellow is definitely one of the stars of the QRPL world. I'm talking about Nick Kennedy, WA5BDU. I've been taking a look. The other morning, I was sitting here thinking about how I could improve the audio selectivity on my 20-meter DSB transceiver, you know, as you do early in the morning. And I did some web searching on it, and I was immediately taken to Nick, WA5BDU's website. And really, something I don't think has received enough attention in the QRP homebrew world, he's got some really great documents, Word documents, up on his site about his 60-meter single sideband transmitter project. And what I really liked about Nick's pages were that he really goes through a very candid and honest discussion of his thinking in how to design the rig, and then the trials and tribulations of actually doing it. And he it's just filled with wisdom, and it's really great to be able to look at somebody else's project and have him go through and explain why a certain component was selected, why a certain circuit was tried but then abandoned, why things didn't work because they were, you know, wired incorrectly. It's really great. It's very much in the spirit of amateur radio homebrew. So this page is easy to find. Just search for WA5BDU, and you'll find it. And it's got a number of great pages on the 60-meter single sideband transmitter. And I think you'll really enjoy looking at that. Certainly, anybody who's building for phone rigs will find it very encouraging. Another thing popped up. I felt real good about this. I'm sure many of you saw it, but somebody sent me an email pointing out that one of Mike KL7R's projects was picked up on April 18th, 2008, by the Make Magazine blog. I think it's called the Maker blog. Again, you can find it really easily. Just Google Make blog, and then you can either search for the date, it's April 18th, or search for Mike KL7R. They carried a story on Mike's very kind of crude spectrum analyzer project. The longtime listeners will recall that we were talking about this a while back. And what Mike had done is he had basically taken a DDS signal generator, a simple mixer circuit, a 10 megahertz crystal filter, and the W7ZOI power meter, along with some attenuator pads, and worked up something so that he could, in a very kind of crude and basic fashion, get a sense of how much harmonic or spurious energy was being put out by a transmitter under test. And it caught the attention of the Make magazine guys, and they ran it on their blog, not knowing, of course, that Mike has passed away, and a couple of very kind, obviously, Solder Smoke fans jumped in and put comments there, making note of that. Yeah, but I'm sure Mike would have been pleased, and I hope it's inspired some people and helped them with their projects. Speaking of which, speaking of spectrum analyzers, I don't have one here. I'm hopeless. I'm really challenged in the test gear department here, guys, and I keep telling myself that I'm going to do something about this. I really need to get a better scope. I make an appeal here for advice on what kind of scope I should get. You know the technical characteristics. I don't need anything really high speed. I need bandwidth. I know I need bandwidth. I need to be able. I right now I have a. It's pathetic. You guys are going to laugh, but I have a 20 megahertz scope here on the table, and I know the dangers of this because the bandwidth is so low that there's quite possible that there's significant harmonics and spurs and uglies in there, but they're beyond the frequency range of the scope, so they don't show up. I know. And it's you get a false sense of comfort. You put that probe there and everything looks beautiful. It looks beautiful because the harmonics are out there beyond the range of the scope. So it's false comfort. Anyway, I need to get beyond that. I have this little ham egg scope. It's one of the virtues of it is it's really small. It's the whole front panel is about the size of my hand, so it doesn't take up a lot of space in the crowded Rome ham shack. So if anybody has any ideas about something similarly sized and similarly simple, getting back to Henry David Thoreau, please send me a note and I'll start bidding on eBay or something. But here, this gets us to the spectrum analyzer. If I only have a 20 megahertz scope, it's highly unlikely that I have a sophisticated spectrum analyzer sitting next to it. But over the years of struggling with homebrew transmitters and trying to figure out if they're if they're actually transmitting on the right frequency, which is what you want, you just develop kind of some instincts or some simple procedures to let you know if things are right with your rig or wrong with your rig. And one of the techniques that I've used, and this is the kind of thing you just develop over the years, is the use of kind of a tuned antenna system and an SWR meter as a very crude indication of whether your rig is functioning properly. And let me explain. I have my my trusty HW8 here set up, and I have my antenna system right now consists of an end-fed wire. I guess it's about 100 feet long. It's about 70 feet up, and I have a little antenna tuner, a homebrew T network that I use to tune it. I should do. What I do is I fire up the HW8, which I know puts out a pretty clean signal. Fire it up on 20 meters and tune for 1-to-1 SWR. Great. Okay, the antenna system is tuned on that frequency or in that frequency band. Then I switch over to the newly constructed 20 meter or newly modified 20 meter double sideband transmitter. I throw the use the same system, switch it over, and begin to do a test transmission from the newly modified rig. Now, if I look up and I see that there's still no that SWR is still roughly 1-to-1, I'm in good shape. Well, at least it's an indication that I'm in good shape. However, if I look over in that same antenna tune system without touching any of the tuning controls or anything else, if I'm getting an indication that I have a 3 or 4-to-1 SWR, well, that's bad news. that means that there are frequencies and energies in there in that signal that are causing standing waves on my antenna system. And if all the frequencies were in the 20 meter band where they're supposed to be, I'd still have a 1-to-1 SWR. So I guess this is just another form of a crude spectrum analyzer. And Mike and I talked about another way of doing sort of spectrum analyzer work, and that's to take a really old oscilloscope and use the sawtooth generator of the scope to vary the frequency of a varactor diode placed across a tuned circuit. And basically what you'd be doing is using the sawtooth generator to control the frequency of the tuned circuit at the input of the scope, so you could use it to run that frequency up and down. And theoretically you'd get a kind of a pan adapter display on the old scope. I always wanted to try that. I never got around to trying it. We talked about it on the show a while back. So that's something that we'll have to one of these day projects. Hey, let me tell you about what I've done with the 20 meter DSB transceiver and amplifier. I told you, I think last episode, that I was involved in a process that I described as exorcism, trying to get the spurs, the parasitic oscillations, the uglies out of the little outboard amplifier. I sent Wes an email and told him that this project is really this whole project is just not the way they would teach you to do it in a double E program. It started out as a kludge with me just kind of slapping different bits of circuitry together, and I'm happy to report that my own understanding of the circuitry has improved quite a bit since I first built the thing. So what happens is when I understand an element of it that I didn't understand before, I go back in and check the circuitry to make sure I got that aspect of it right. And so there are kind of layers of technical ability and understanding in this rig. You could almost, it's almost like one of those paintings where if you look in a little bit deeper, that there's a different layer of the painting underneath it. And there's in this case, there's different layers of my own crude understanding of electronic circuitry in there. For example, when I first built the thing, I didn't really have any understanding of the use of feedback in amplifier circuitry. I mean, I didn't really understand it at all. I didn't understand why you would use a negative feedback or degenerative feedback in the emitter. I didn't understand how it affected impedance and how it allowed you to control gain. I had not been enlightened by the book Experimental Methods for RF Design or SSDRA even. So later on, when I did use those books and come to an understanding of what was going on there, I went back and said, oh, wow, I guess it would be better if I turned these amplifiers into feedback amplifiers, get greater stability and control over the impedances and all that. And so anyway, you can see what I'm talking about. I kind of go back and I fix things. Also, this thing started out with a crystal controlled VXO at the heart, and then, well, I discovered ceramic resonators, and Mike suggested that I put two of them in parallel, and that's what I have in there now. So the whole thing has changed. Anyway, the outboard amplifier, it's even more of a kludge. It's the final amplifier from an old circuit called the VXO 6 Water from QRP Classics. And it originally was in a 30-meter CW transmitter that I built in 1994 in the Dominican Republic, one of my first homebrew projects. I was sitting around here, and when I decided to put out a little bit more power on 20-meter DSB, I pulled that circuit into out of the junk box and then kind of stupidly tried to modify it for use as a linear class AB amplifier on 20 meters. So, of course, I had to change the low-pass filters. I had to add a bias circuit. I had to play with the input circuit to get a good match with the 20-meter DSB transmitter. It goes on and on. Many times, believe me, guys, many times in this project I said, hey, stop. Scrap this whole thing. Start out with a completely clean PC board. Work on the layout. Make sure you got good grounding. Follow all the rules to prevent the spurs and the oscillations and the uglies and the need for exorcism and all that. But you know how it is. You're already invested in this thing. You've already gone along, and you're thinking, all right, I just want to sort of put an end to this project, but I want to put an end to it working. It's the knack again. It's the knack. So I kept at it. Anyway, the exorcism was complete. It's actually fun, and I got to use a lot of... Hold on, my computer screen just went blank. Oh, there it is. It's still going. There they go again. I got to use all bits and pieces of technology and techniques that I just didn't have when I started out. For example, LT Spice has been a big help. I really have come to to use that program quite a bit. It's great. For example, I wanted to know. I knew that I might not have a perfect match between the first RF amplifier and the output of the NE602 that I'm using as a balanced modulator. So, I have a real simple impedance transformer on a toroidal core with a tuned circuit there, and I just wanted to know, would it be better for me to add turns to the secondary or remove turns from the secondary? So with LT Spice, I could just go right on there and just change the value of the inductance of the secondary. And it told me that I should probably remove a couple of turns, and I did, and I got a little bit better match, a little bit more clean power out. At one point, I wanted to know, for example, should I reduce the amount of negative feedback in one of the amplifier stages in an effort to get a bit more gain? And I consulted EMRFD for some ideas on how I should change the value of the feedback networks, and then went and confirmed with LT Spice that it would probably work out pretty well with the other circuits I had in there. So I did that. What I ended up doing, one of my main problems was that the outboard amplifier just wasn't providing a good 50 ohm load to the exciter, to the DSP transceiver. So I had to I built a little L network that was designed to match the very low input impedance of the BJT class AB amplifier to 50 ohms. And I found a good article on this in kind of the back section of QRP Classics. So I just built it. I built it with a little toroidal coil, one compression trimmer, and one fixed cap, kind of in a T configuration. You put it in there, and here's how I did the match. Here's how I determined, you know, without having a whole lot of sophisticated gear, I don't even have any of the bridge circuits that Mike had, but here's how I did it, and I hope, tell me if I did this wrong, but it'll be painful for me if you guys send me emails saying, oh no, that's a terrible, terrible technique. Here's what I did. I fired up the exciter, the whole thing on the bench. I got the exciter and I got the amplifier right next to it. I fire up the exciter and I put, it's all going into a dummy load, and I put a signal through the exciter, and basically I watch what looks like the standard two-tone pattern coming out on my pathetically narrow band 20 megahertz scope. Looks pretty good. You know, you got the little two-tone test pattern. With a DSP transmitter, of course, you only need one tone and you get the same pattern, but that's another story. But anyway, I know that I'm putting out a clean output into a 50 ohm resistive dummy load. I'm looking at the output of the exciter. I then throw the switch on the linear, the QRP QRO switch, and I go boom. I kick in the linear. I'm still looking at the output of the exciter, and of course, when I throw the switch, now the exciter is being presented not with just the dummy load straight through the relays in the amplifier. Now it's being actually presented with the load created by the amplifier circuitry, the base input circuitry of the amplifier, which is quite different. So what I do is I adjust the L network so that the pattern that I see on the scope, the level of the signal, is identical to what the level would be when it's going into a 50 ohm load. You see what I'm saying? I first take a look on the scope and I see, okay, I adjust the scope so I'm getting a signal of 1 centimeter from the baseline, clean output. I throw the switch, and when the L network is not adjusted, the input circuitry of the outboard amplifier is presenting a very different load, and of course it changes the signal. It changes the pattern that I'm seeing on the scope. Then I go ahead and adjust the little L network until I see the same pattern with the amplifier in as I saw when the exciter was connected just to a 50-ohm dummy load. And I know that now I hope that I have adjusted the amplifier input circuitry to provide a 50-ohm load to the exciter. It seemed to work. I mean, the values I selected, I knew I was in the ballpark because the values I selected for the L network and my rough estimate of the input impedance of the amplifier circuitry couldn't be that far off. And I used some kind of values for the toroid that could be varied. You know, you could vary the impedance of the inductance of a toroid by compressing or spreading out the windings a bit. And I had the compression trimmer there instead of a fixed capacitor. So by a little bit of wiggling of the moving of the windings on the toroid and tuning of the trimming capacitor, I got it to about 50 ohms. And it looks good, and it's fine. It took care of a lot of the distortion problems I'd been having, and it essentially completed the exorcism. I'm a bit concerned because still, when I transmit with this thing, I can see a very slight bit of SWR kicking up. I'm talking like 1.1, 1.2 to 1 on kind of voice peaks. And I'm not sure whether it's distortion or whether I'm overdriving it. It might be just that I need a little bit more of a robust low pass filter. It might be just some of the harmonic energy getting through that shouldn't be getting through. I'm not going to worry about it too much. I'm getting good signal reports, and it sounds very clean. I'm probably better off without a real spectrum analyzer, because ignorance is bliss sometimes, certainly in a case like this. Anyway, so that's what I've been up to. And then once I got the circuitry done, I had no further excuse for avoiding antenna work, and decided to head up to the roof and put up a real antenna. I bought about 100 feet of just ordinary kind of thin zip cord wire, and I put it up there, and it's supported up on the roof by about a 15 foot piece of PVC pipe. It gives me basically a 100 foot end fed long wire up about 70 feet, and of course, I ran right back down to the shack, tuned it up, and to see what I could do. And I was rewarded, guys. I was rewarded by the radio gods for my work on the antennas and on the circuitry. I immediately fired up the rig on 20 CW and worked a station in Belgium with 1 watt. I know it's not big DX, but for me, it was okay. And then I switched over to 20 phone. And managed to break through a pileup, and with my 2 watts of output, worked 4 Lima 4 whiskey in the Republic of Georgia. So it was a good radio day here at Italy Zero / November 2 Charlie Quebec Radio. One of the great things about this whole project, the work with the 20 meter DSB rig, has been how each evening at 8:30 we have a little round table here around 14313, 14320. The band is usually dead by that time, and it's just locals here who get on and mostly talk about the progress or lack thereof on my transmitter. We also talk about some of the antenna projects that the other guys are working on or new projects. It's all in Italian, so it's great for me because I get to practice my Italian. I'm developing a peculiar set of abilities in Italian. I can only speak about technical projects. I'm fine talking about balanced modulators, but if you ask me to order scrambled eggs at the restaurant, I'm completely helpless. but there's a great bunch of guys there who we meet up with each night. There's Italy Zero Yankee Radio, Italy Zero Zulu Yankee, Italy Kilo Zero Zulu Mike Hotel. Anyway, we meet up each night at 8:30 for about a half hour, and it's sort of kind of thumbs up or thumbs down on whatever changes that I've brought about with the transceiver and the antenna system. So, that's what we were what I've been up to there. All right, I guess it's time before we wrap this up. And one thing very important that we can't forget. Oh, man, that's awful. Hold on. I think Maria put a magnet on the thing. There you go. That's better. Time for Solder Smoke Mailbag. Let's see. We got I put out an appeal for help for Gary, the fellow with the knack who's blind and is looking for help on how to homebrew without being able to read the schematics or the instructions on a rig. We got some really great suggestions from Australia. A fellow wrote in and said that he was aware of what he wants to call Bedson diagrams. I think that this is really a great idea. It's something that was worked up by the XYL of a blind radio amateur in Australia a while back. What she would do is to allow him to see the schematics. She worked out a system of using aluminum foil and placed on a kind of a rubber mat. I get the impression that it was kind of thicker than normal aluminum foil, kind of maybe a cross between an aluminum panel and an aluminum foil. And then she would just go through and redraw the schematic diagram and basically make it kind of 3D so that he could run his fingers across it and study the circuitry. Kind of a crude form of schematic braille. And we'll follow the suggestion. We'll call those Bedson diagrams. The other thing that came across that was interesting was the use of swell paper. Apparently, a certain kind of paper, if you placed it in a laser printer, will cause the printing to swell up off the page noticeably. Again, creating the same kind of 3D effect. So, thanks for everybody who wrote in on those with those ideas. I passed them on to Gary, and we'll hopefully he'll let us know how any of that works out. Many guys expressed a willingness or a desire to help out and a wish that he was closer to them so that they could help out. I'm sure he's gonna could be able to make some progress. I also suggested to him that maybe a Michigan Mighty Mite or a rig like that would be a good way to start, very kind of 3D project, and just build something to generate some radio waves. It would probably be a lot of fun for him. Got another nice email from Steve G0FUW, and we were talking about mixer circuits, and he asked me about parabolic current. He thought he was okay with some of the circuitry until he read mention of parabolic current. I told him I'd never heard of parabolic current, and I told him that maybe I don't want to hear about it because if it might just confuse me even further. So good luck with the parabolic current, Steve, but unless you figure it out and it's something that could be easily understood, please please keep me out of it. Chris GM4YLN writes in about some surface mount adventures that he's been having. And guys, I'm going to close this solder smoke with a note that somebody sent me. I think it might have been it was Steve, and we were talking about the solder smoke April Fool edition, and Steve alerted me to the fact that I may have fallen victim to another April Fool's, and this one might have been pretty subtle, but I might have been the victim too. So let me share this with you. I was talking about the latest issue of Sprat, my favorite magazine, and I mentioned the article on kind of organic power sources that was in the spring issue, the spring 2008 issue of Sprat, and spring, of course, includes April 1st. And I was referring to the article by Hans Summers on his efforts to homebrew electricity and homebrew batteries. And I mentioned that Hans had calculated that it would take 30,000 lemons with the appropriate metallic electrodes to power his little QRP rig. I asked Hans for the formula for the lemons per watt or something like that. And Steve points out that, well, 30,000 lemons, this whole thing, was I taken in? Hans, do you really make, is that really the estimate? Or were you just trying to get somebody on an April Fool's article? I don't know. It's one of these areas, and that's the good thing about, that's the kind of April Fool's joke that QST would go for, the 30,000 lemons bit, because it might be, you never know. So Hans, let me know if I was the victim. I definitely have my defenses up, but well, especially next year, I'll have to be very vigilant starting around March 1st, because I know I'm due for some retribution here. All right, guys, that's it for Sauter Smoke 82. Going to be on the road doing a little bit of traveling around Italy here this week, but I'll have my BlackBerry with me. So please keep those emails coming in, and we look forward to talking to you all again when it's time for Sauter Smoke 83. 73 from Rome.